May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer.
Amen. Amen.
In the readings appointed for this morning, there are many rich potential sermon topics. The interesting descriptions of wisdom in Proverbs, that wonderful image of bridling the tongue in James, and then even in the Gospel, Jesus' words about losing and saving one's life and taking up one's own cross. But the topic that I'm going to focus on today, at least, is that portion of the Gospel reading that is usually called the Confession of Peter. The Confession of Peter. It even has its own feast day on the church calendar, this event. In late January, the Confession of Peter, it's called. Not confession in the sense of confessing to wrongdoing, but confession in the sense of witnessing, of proclaiming. In the passage that we heard this morning, Peter proclaims Jesus as Messiah. Jesus asks those around him, "Who do people say that I am?" And he gives a variety of answers. And then he presses his disciples and says, "Who do you say? Who do you think that I am?" And Peter says, "You are the Messiah." When I think about all of the Gospel stories, I think maybe this is the only time that Peter gets something right. But it doesn't last. This story appears in all three of the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And in all three, Peter witnesses in some collection of words to Jesus' identity as the Messiah. In Matthew, he says, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." In Luke, Jesus is just described by Peter as the Messiah of God. God's Messiah. A title, an understanding for who Jesus was and is. A title, certainly, that is familiar to us, familiar as a word, as a title. Although I wonder, in an assembly, if each of us were asked, "What does that particular title mean to you?" We might get an assortment of answers or non-answers. What does it really mean? What are we really saying about Jesus when we call him Messiah? Just as many of us are probably confused about that title today, as it turns out, Peter was confused also. Peter got the name right, at least in one sense, and yet he got pretty much everything else wrong. And I think, at least for me, the fact that Peter got it wrong and what he got wrong is more instructive for me, for us today, than the fact that he got the one thing right. Peter named Jesus as Messiah, but then when Jesus went on to talk about the fulfillment of his ministry, Peter was pretty upset. Jesus' descriptions did not coincide with Peter's expectations. Peter's expectations of the Messiah. It was Peter's expectations of what the Messiah would do. It was Peter's expectations of what it meant to call Jesus Messiah that were way off. Peter's expectations. I sometimes think we might do better to call this passage not the confession of Peter, but the revelation of Peter's misguided expectations. You may know that there was, in particularly the religious culture of Peter's day, that a big part of what the Messiah would do would be a powerful political leader. So Peter having that expectation of the Messiah is perhaps understandable. Peter clearly does not expect God's Messiah to undergo suffering or to be rejected in any way. I'm assuming, projecting things onto Peter here, but I'm assuming that that was really not the sort of God that Peter wanted to be associated with. A God who was rejected, a God who knew suffering, a God who shared the darkest parts of human life. Perhaps Peter wanted to be associated with a winner, a God of glory and power, a God who would do him proud, a God who would be acclaimed by all. I don't know if that's what Peter expected, but it's not an unreasonable expectation. Peter had lots of expectations. Expectations of God. Expectations of God. Expectations that grew, in part, undoubtedly, out of the religious culture of his day. Perhaps some of those expectations also grew out of Peter's own needs for who God should be in the world. But they were Peter's expectations. They were Peter's expectations. They were his human expectations. And they were off the mark. Jesus says, "You are looking to human things, not divine things." The challenge in this for me is to ask, what are my expectations of Jesus and God that come from me, that come just from me, maybe in part out of my environment, my culture, maybe out of my own needs? But what expectations do I, like Peter? Peter is a wonderful example over and over and over again for us, what it means to be human beings seeking God. What are your expectations, your own expectations of Jesus, of God, in the world, perhaps in your own life? And if God isn't always meeting those expectations, perhaps it is the expectations we should question. That's what this passage challenges me to consider. There are a couple of ways we can respond when God's not meeting our expectations. We can curse or abandon God. Many do. Or we can look at those expectations, those human expectations that we are imposing upon God. The problem for Peter was not that God was absent or passive in his life. God was being made known through Jesus right in front of him. God was acting, teaching, right in the midst of Peter's lives. The problem was not that God had walked away. The disconnect was caused by Peter's misguided expectations. If God is not meeting our expectations, perhaps we need to challenge or abandon those expectations and approach God and approach God as human beings, not so much with a set of expectations or demands on who we want or need or think God should be, but just to approach God with an openness. Here am I, Lord. Here am I, open and receptive to your presence, to your love, to your guidance, however that may be given to me. Open and receptive. Here am I. The scriptures and the witness of Christians across the centuries tell us that God is met in all sorts of human experiences, often in places of weakness and suffering. Not in times of noisy triumph and glory, but in times of quiet hope and sustenance. Not so much in meeting our demands, our expectations, but coming to us in our time of need, offering us freedom for our souls, joy and hope in the midst of our lives, when we are open to the presence of God, putting aside those human expectations or demands that we might have, and looking purely for the divine presence